Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have an interview with someone you may or may not have heard of. If you were around in the 80s or the 90s, I'm sure you heard of this guy. His name is Russ Testo. And Russ is a natural bodybuilder, but he really was an innovator in the world of posing and guest posing. Russ was one of the first ones to do the robot act and to lip sync to different songs. When Michael Jackson was popular in the 1980s, Russ had a lot of great routines from that and also with Prince. And he was such a great poser. He always won the best poser at the contest that he entered, but he got the attention of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Arnold actually brought him to guest pose at the Mr. Olympia in 1979 and also 1981. And he guest posed at the Arnold Classic and many, many other shows. He was one of the most, probably the most popular guest poser in the bodybuilding world for probably about 15 to 20 years. So Russ is now in his 60s. He's still guest posing. So we had a great interview with Russ about his career and how all his stories of him guest posing all around the world. So you guys are really going to enjoy this interview. It's a real old school interview because Russ talks about Arnold and Jim Lorimer and all the people that he met during his travels. So you guys are going to love this. All right, before we get to our interview with Russ, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn. It's the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout. Or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you'll get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, speaking of Old School Labs, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview last week, which were a couple of interviews I did with Old School Labs. Last year in 2018, when I traveled out to Venice, California and went to Gold's Gym and we did a bunch of interviews out there, including the interview we did with Tom Platz and Samir Banut. So that was really interesting. I love listening to those interviews again. Tom is really a great motivator, and you can hear the passion in his voice. And I know a lot of you guys have wanted me to interview Tom, but he's working on that ebook right now, so he's not doing any interviews. So I was glad we got to do that interview at least and get that up so you guys could hear that. So I hope you enjoyed that. All right, so what else is going on? We are already in the month of December. Christmas will be here before you know it. I've got a couple announcements to make of some things I've got going on, which are going to be really exciting. First of all, I got that new website up called John Hansen Fitness. And as you know, with the new year, a lot of people use that time to get in shape, to motivate themselves and set up goals. So what I'm going to do to celebrate my new website is we're going to have a contest called the John Hansen Fitness Challenge. The contest is going to begin on Monday, January 6th. It's going to last 12 weeks, so it'll go until March 30th, 2020, obviously. And for this contest, what I usually do when I set up a diet and training program is I have the person fill out a questionnaire and tell me what their goals are, what kind of diet they're currently following, if it's working, are they trying to gain weight, lose weight, build muscle, get more ripped, and they tell me what kind of training routine they're doing, how much cardio and everything. And then I tweak it and I fix it up in order for the person to reach their goals. And then that initial program usually lasts about 4 weeks. So I follow up with the person for a month to see if they're making progress and I change anything that needs to be changed. So what I'm going to do for this John Hansen Fitness Challenge is I'm going to do this program for 12 weeks instead of 4 weeks. So for the initial fee of $300, you will get me as your coach for 12 weeks until this challenge is over with. So I will be guiding you every step of the way, and then it's up to you to make the progress that you can make. And whoever makes the most progress, and we're going to measure the progress by how many inches you've lost or how much muscle you've gained, depending on what your goal is, and also your transformation picture, because you have to take a before picture by January 6th, and then the after picture has to be taken by March 30th. Whoever reaches the greatest progress will win some prizes. So we've got Old School Labs working with me on this. They're going to give out free supplements for the first three placers, first, second, and third. I am going to give out my books also as a prize. And the winner will get interviewed by me on YouTube, and we're going to put the interview on YouTube so he or she can talk about why they entered this contest and what kind of progress they made. This will be on my new website, which is called johnhansonfitness.com. If you guys want more information about it, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I've also got a seminar coming up next year, which I'm really, really excited about. This is going to be a two-day seminar. It's going to take place out here in Tampa, Florida. It's a bodybuilding seminar, so I'm basically going to talk about everything I've learned for the last 40-plus years that I've been a bodybuilder since I was 14 years old. So this is going to take place on March 21st and 22nd in the year 2020, of course, and it'll be next year out in Tampa, Florida at the Powerhouse Gym. So this is going to be a combination of a lecture seminar and hands-on training in the gym. So half the day we're going to spend talking about all the different concepts of training and nutrition and how to assess your body's potential, how to continue making progress, every aspect that I can think of is in regards to bodybuilding that I've learned over my 40 years of training. And then the second half of the day, we are going to go into the gym and we are going to train every single body part, chest, back, shoulders, arms, legs, abs, calves, everything. And we're going to do it over 2 days. So we're going to do it on Saturday and Sunday, which again, I said 21st and 22nd of March. And like I said, half the day will be training lecture seminar. And then the other half will be in the gym training where it'll be hands-on. I'm going to show everybody how to do the exercises correctly. And in the seminar, we're going to talk about how to structure a training program so you can make continued progress, how to put on size, how to get ripped while keeping your muscle, the different training principles, how to train each body part, how many sets to do, everything. So I'm really, really excited about this. Last year, I was doing a bunch of seminars, and I got the idea for doing my own seminar from doing those seminars. Those seminars were more just basic muscle physiology and exercise, and this is going to be based more on my experience. So we will have the poster up on johnhansonfitness.com. I'm also going to be doing a lot of advertising on social media. And again, if any of you out there are interested in this and want to travel to Tampa, Florida, or if you're in the Florida area, it'll be on March 21st, 22nd next year. You can just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I'm going to have more information coming out soon in the next week or two, but I just wanted to let everybody know about that. I'm really, really excited about this because I've done a lot of seminars over the years. I think I started doing seminars back in 1987 in the Chicagoland area before anybody was really doing them. And this was like a year after I won the 86 Illinois State Championship, which was the first big contest I won. But I've never done like an extensive two-day seminar like this where I think I'll be able to cover every single subject that I think is important as far as bodybuilding goes. So if you guys are interested in that, again, email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I will have the poster and more information ready very, very soon. All right. So after we get done with our interview today with Russ Testo, I'm going to read another article. And this one comes from the January 1981 issue of Iron Man magazine. It's written by Gary Bartlett, who we've had on the show before. And it's called Frank Zane, How He Trained. So it's a really good article. This was done right after the 1980 Olympia, where Frank lost the Olympia title to Arnold and to Chris Dickerson, took third place in that contest. But Gary talks about Frank's training philosophy and his diet philosophy and what helped him win the Mr. Olympia three times and become one of the most iconic bodybuilders ever. So this was a really good article. And what we got coming up in the next few weeks, we did that thing last year with Jerry Branum, where we talked about our end of the year review, but instead of reviewing 2019, like a lot of bodybuilding podcasts are going to be doing, because this is the bodybuilding legends and we talk about the past, we are going to go 50 years back, 40 years back, and 30 years back. And we did this last year and it really worked out good with Jerry. So I'm going to call Jerry up and see if we can do it again. And this time, of course, we'll talk about the year 1969, 1979, and 1989. And some of the topics we're going to go over in 1969, of course, that was where Arnold lost the Olympia to Sergio Oliva. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Boyer Coe, who had a great year that year. He won the Mr. America and the NABBA Mr. Universe, and he beat out Jim Haislop and Franco Colombo, among others. So we'll talk about that, of course. Then we go to 1979. Of course, we're going to talk about Frank Zane winning his third Mr. Olympia over Mike Mentzer. We'll also talk about Mike Mentzer's first year as a pro, where he had a really good debut winning the Florida Grand Prix show. We're going to talk about the Night of the Champions that year, where Robbie beat out Danny Padilla. We'll also talk about the 79 Mr. America, where Ray Mentzer won. And then we'll talk about the 79 Mr. Universe, where Joseph Wilkosch beat out Ray Mentzer in the heavyweight class, and Samir Banute beat out Ron Tufel in the light heavyweight class. And we'll also talk about the NABBA Universe that year, where they had a great showdown between Tony Pearson and Ahmet Anulu from Turkey. So we got a lot to talk about from the year 1979. And then we'll finish off, this will probably be a three-part series, and we'll talk about 1989. And, of course, the Mr. Olympia that year was in Rimini, Italy. I think that was Lee Haney's sixth Mr. Olympia. And Vince Taylor, that was his pro debut year where he won the Night of the Champions. That was also the first year of the Arnold Classic, where Rich Gaspari won the very first Arnold Classic in 1989. So that'll be interesting to talk about. Troy Zuccolato, who was our guest 2 weeks ago, he won the Nationals that year. And then we'll also talk about the NABBA Universe from that year and the AAU Mr. America. And that was when the AAU and the MPC were still battling it out. So that was kind of an interesting time. So we got a lot to talk about. I might also try to give Roger Schwab and Wayne Galash a call, and maybe we can get their opinions on those years, because I know Wayne was there for the NABBA Universe, and I believe Roger was the head judge in 79 at the Olympia. So it'd be interesting to hear his opinions too. We've got a lot of topics to talk about. We had a lot of fun doing that last year with Jerry Branum. So we're going to try and do that again. I'm going to try and make that an annual thing to finish off the year and bring in the next year, which will be 2020. All right. Now, before we get to our interview with Russ Testo, I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number at 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that is flalternativemeds.com. They will work with anybody in the continental United States. You don't have to be in the Florida area. And tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They'll give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that's it for our opening. Here is our interview with Russ Testo, the master guest poser. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have a very special guest with us this week. His name is Mr. Russ Testo. And Russ was one of the most popular and sought-after guest posers in the late 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And Russ was a natural bodybuilder, but he combined some very unique posing routines to music. And he was doing something that was never done before. And he actually guest posed at the Mr. Olympia several times and also the Arnold Classic. So, Russ, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me as your guest.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been a fan of yours for many years, Russ. I was at the, I believe, the 79, was it, or 81 Olympia that you guest posed?
Yeah, that was the first one, 1981. Really? You were there? No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, when Franco won, right?
Yeah.
And then I saw it also in 86, because you were there in 86 again, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, that was the last one that I did.
Wow. Well, Russ, let's start from the very beginning. How did you get involved in bodybuilding? What was the attraction? How did you start lifting weights?
Bodybuilding wasn't the attraction. It was the fact that I was the smallest kid on the ice playing hockey.
Okay.
And wasn't so much me, as my father was a little bit concerned that I was going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I weighed 95 pounds at 5 feet going into my freshman year in high school.
Wow, 5 feet. Okay.
Yeah. So I was usually the smallest kid on the ice, and I needed to gain some strength, gain some weight.
Mm-hmm.
I had attempted to lift weights at a few times, but without success, and I wasn't much for exercise as a kid. I didn't have a lot of discipline. However, my father happened to meet someone or know someone whose son-in-law was a local weightlifter bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
A man by the name of Jim Harley. He was involved with both, all three actually, bodybuilding, Olympic lifting, and powerlifting.
Hmm.
And so my father brought me over to his house on a summer night in August of 1971. And that was the first time that I had seen 45-pound plates and 45-pound barbells, squat racks. He had a really neat, cool setup in his basement at the time. And so this gentleman got me started with weight training, put me on a basic program, and I was on my way. But again, I wasn't doing it for bodybuilding reasons right away. I was trying to gain weight and strength to be a better hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
But with time, that bodybuilding bug bit. He gave me muscular development magazines and strength and health magazines from late 60s, early 70s. And just from looking at these magazines and just from training, I just started to see the physique. The male physique was starting to appeal to me more and more. And I was starting to see it as an art.
Mm-hmm.
And but I continued to train through high school pretty much for sports, for hockey, and in through college. But again, that the desire, the bodybuilding desire was becoming more and more. And I finally decided to compete and get in my first competition in June of 1978 in Old Greenwich, Connecticut, the Novice Mr. Eastern Seaboard, AAU Novice Mr. Eastern Seaboard.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Dickerson and Bill Pearl were judges.
Wow.
I believe they were placing the top five in each category. And I don't remember what category that I was supposed to be in, but because there were not enough contestants, they had to combine my category with another category. They placed the top 10 with that, but I still did not place. I think I might have come in 11th or 12th, but I didn't care because it was the posing that I was all fired up about. At that time, I had known of Ed Corney, and Pumping Iron definitely had come out at that point.
Yeah.
And it was just his whole artistic way of posing and his slow movements and his very deliberate movements, and he was just a whole artist up there. And I said, "Yeah, this is what bodybuilding is all about." So I didn't care that I didn't place. I was up there trying to be Ed Corney. At the same time, I was doing poses that he was doing. I was doing poses that Arnold was doing, and Zane and everyone. And my cousin who was with me that first show, he said there was someone yelling in the audience, he looks like a ballerina.
God.
which I don't think was a compliment.
Right.
but in a way it was.
Right.
In a way it was, because everybody else was just kind of doing the same, you know, the same poses. And you know, back then we weren't posing to music. All
yeah.
they had was they had music playing in the background.
Right, that's true. What were your gains like, Russ? You said you started off like 5 feet tall, 95 pounds. What, you know, when you first started, the first few years of weight training, what kind of gains did you make?
Well, I remember putting on 5 pounds that first month that I started training.
Okay.
But also, John, in high school, I was on and off with it. So, you know, I started training in August of 71, and I probably went right up to, let's see, maybe October at some point. But then once hockey started, I don't think I really continued with it, or I might have been very sporadic with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I probably picked it up again in the spring.
Yeah, when hockey was over.
And that's the way it kind of was all through high school. There was never a time where I made fast or quick gains.
Mm-hmm.
Except I'm thinking maybe, I don't even want to say my senior year in high school. I think it was more into after high school, I went to a prep school for a year of postgraduate work to better my grades and also to play hockey in a more competitive league, which allows you a better chance of being noticed by college coaches.
Okay.
So I think it was that year when I was 18 at the school called Trinity Pauling. And my brother seems to remember that when I had come home from that year, that he recalls me putting on some weight a little bit more quicker than usual, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, overall, there was never a time where I made faster, incredible gains. For me, it's always been slow.
Yeah.
Slow.
Yeah. Did you notice a difference in your hockey playing when you started the weight training?
Well, some think I slowed up.
Oh, really?
Some think it slowed me up.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have been possible because I definitely didn't work my legs as much as I should have.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely enjoyed working the upper body more than the legs. And maybe the weight was more in my upper body that I was putting on, and who knows, it might have slowed me up a little bit. But absolutely though, it definitely helped me in hitting on the ice. I wasn't the type of hockey player that was out to beat people up anyway. I was more of the finesse player. I liked putting the puck in the net. I liked being fancy on the ice with moves, quickness, mm-hmm. speed. But when someone came at me and tried to take me down, I remember more than once putting my shoulder into them and me staying on my feet and the other person going down. So yes,
yeah.
The bodybuilding absolutely helped.
Okay. Now, when did you start getting into the sport of bodybuilding? Was it when that guy started giving you the magazines?
No, it wasn't until, as I mentioned, it was 1978. June of 1978 was my first competition.
Okay. But when did you start admiring like the guys like Arnold and Zane and Corny?
Yes, absolutely. Through high school.
Okay.
Definitely all through high school. And I remember when Arnold was featured in September 1974 in Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
It was him and Franco. He had most of the article. And so, yeah, it was. Oh, definitely. Before I forget, I had Arnold from that magazine. He was doing a three-quarter back pose. I
mm-hmm.
took that photo from that magazine, had it hanging in my locker.
Mm.
now this is 1974 now. So
mm-hmm.
that was pretty unusual to have a bodybuilder hanging in your locker in 1974.
Right.
Back then, most guys had their favorite athlete or their girlfriend.
Right.
I had Arnold Schwarzenegger. So people used to look, you know, the other students, my friends, "Ooh, you want to look like that?" Yes.
Right. And you mentioned the movie Pumping Iron. Did you get a chance to see that, Russ, when it came out?
Yes, I did. Yes,
yeah.
I did. It was at one of the local theaters here. And I forget who I went to see it with. I think it was, it might have been a friend of mine who I was playing hockey with. And as I was walking out, a local bodybuilder, he was probably 6 or 7 years older than me. I believe his name was Craig E. Leiter. He was competing at the time. He was older than me and bigger than me, of course, and everything. But what I'm saying is, he's the only person there that I think I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I remember saying, "Craig, what do you think?" And he was like, Oh, I love it. I love it." and it was just a great movie. You know, you just felt so good because Arnold was becoming more and more popular, and not so much Arnold, but just the sport itself was finally getting some publicity and exposure and some respect.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw it in the theater too. I think I was 14, but I felt the same way. It was like, you finally, like, bodybuilding was becoming cool, and it was like validated in that movie, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to say this too. To me, the biggest mistake they made, they did not give Ed Corney enough time.
Mm-hmm.
They should have showed more of him. You know, it's, Arnold says, now that's posing. But mm-hmm. they did not show him enough. They did not show the art of this sport enough.
Yeah. So when did you start getting into that, Russ? When did you start realizing that this is an art form and the posing is so important?
Well, it was right from the first contest. I just wanted to me the whole thing of being up there on stage and showing the male physique, there was so much more to it than just, you know, hey, look at me and grunting and just showing your muscles here and there. And
mm-hmm.
just, again, it was just the way Ed Corney was doing it, going from one pose to the next with beautiful transitions and expression and form and beauty.
Yeah. What was the reaction to the way you were posing in that first show? Did anybody say anything to you, the judges or other competitors or anybody in the audience?
Yeah, that was where that one person yelled out, he looks like a ballerina. So,
right.
you know, that was about the only thing I heard.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think my second contest here in Albany, New York, which I believe was the Mr. Capital District contest. I continued to pose the same way and definitely had people yelling in the audience, you know, with compliments, Russ, you look good and very smooth and very artistic and things like that. Yes.
Yeah. And you also, I think, made the decision early on too, Russ, that to become a natural bodybuilder, not to use any steroids, which were becoming more, there were a lot more people were using them around the 1970s, right?
Yes. That first night that I went over to that man's house that got me started, Jim Harley, mm-hmm. he told me of Dianabol. He mentioned that to me and he told me what it was. And my immediate reaction was, it's not right. It's a drug. It's not right. And I looked at it as cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Cheating myself, even cheating against others. So I had made the decision that night not to ever do it.
Wow. Did you notice on that very first show you did that other guys were using them?
Oh yeah, they were all. I mean, I was competing against pretty much Connecticut and Long Island and New York City, and they were all. I mean, I was nothing compared to these guys.
Mm-hmm. Was that discouraging to you?
It wasn't at first, because I knew I just need some time here. I just need to keep training and keep eating. But later on, I definitely got discouraged. I'd say around, 81, after that first Mr. No, before it, I think 1980, I'm thinking 1980 is when I started to get a little bit discouraged because it seems like everybody around here was making gains and I wasn't getting any better.
Right. Now I know you did the natural Mr. America, right? 1 year. When did you start going over to the natural organizations?
That was 1981.
Okay.
In Utica, New York, Tom Ciola, had the, oh boy, I forget what he called that organization, but it was a natural organization, and he had the natural Mr. America in 1981 and in 1982 in Utica, mm-hmm. New York. And that 81, I believe I took fourth in the medium class. Mm-hmm. It was height class now.
Right.
Fourth in the medium, and I had one best poser. The following, there were 1,600 people in that audience that night, and that was the night that I did a routine to music called Magic Bird of Fire, which was considered a disco instrumental version of Stravinsky's Firebird Suite. It was a popular song that was being played in the dance clubs around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the suggestion of my brother. My brother used to like that song a lot. But we need to go back a few months. In March of 1981, I competed in a show around here called the Mr. Eastern USA.
Okay.
And that was the first time that I decided to put the robot movements into a posing routine.
Okay.
So after 1978, after that first contest, and I competed in a few shows after that, doing standard type posing, I had always had this idea of putting robot movements into a posing routine from watching Shields and Yarnell. Do you remember Shields and Yarnell?
No, it kind of sounds familiar.
Shields and Yarnell were a husband and wife team that did skits in robot.
Okay.
They used to be guest stars on like the Dean Martin Show, Sonny and Cher. And even one summer, they had their own show all summer. And they just, you know, they moved like robots. And it was fascinating. I mean, it was just amazing what they were doing back then.
Yeah.
And from watching them, it just gave me this idea, what would it be like to put robot movements in a posing routine?
Hmm.
So at this contest in Albany in March of 81, I decided to try this. I had to learn it first. I had to learn robot movements first. And that is a story in itself, meeting a couple of local dancers, street dancers, who were locking and popping and doing robot movements. So I learned this from them and then decided to choreograph a routine to 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, wow.
Not the original version, though. It was a jazzed version by a group called Deodato.
Okay.
And so I started in that thinker's position and pumped myself up like a mechanic, like a mechanical toy, and then pretty much went through standard poses with that, and then at the end came back down as I started.
Yeah, cool.
So that led my brother to say, Russ, why don't you do a routine to Magic Bird of Fire? And I said, Rich, it's over 4 minutes long. He said, go ahead, work on it. You can do it. So I worked on it. And so that summer of 81 is when Tom Sciola had that natural Mr. America. And that's where I used the Magic Bird of Fire routine.
Okay. Now, at that Eastern USA, what was the reaction from the crowd when you did that robot? Because I imagine no one had done that before, right?
Yes, yes, they loved that. But you know what else? You know what the main thing was, John? The main thing was the musicality.
Mm-hmm.
I was moving to the music.
Right.
Which no one else was doing. And people can see the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had one best poser that day, too. That was held. They had a big physical fitness thing that weekend here in Albany. And they had brought in Tom Platz, Rachel McClish, Claudia Wilborn.
Wow.
Who else? Dennis Tinerino. He emceed the contest. And
really?
Then they had Lou Ferrigno come in Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he came on stage. He didn't really guest pose. He hit a few front double biceps with his shirt on. And I think he talked to the crowd a little bit, and that was it. But it was a very exciting weekend. And Dennis Tinerino was very impressed with what I did.
Yeah.
So it was a nice weekend. But it's the show in Utica that opened the door for me.
Okay.
There was a gentleman by the name of Kurt Haywood who competed in the over 40 division from Columbus, Ohio.
Ah, okay.
Kurt and Arnold were very close.
Mm-hmm.
So Kurt thought it would be a good idea to get this routine in front of Arnold.
Hmm.
Originally, we were going to send a videotape. It didn't have the effect of seeing it live.
Hmm.
So Kurt sets up an audition. My brother and I drive, 9 hours or 11 hours to Columbus, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Audition for Arnold and Jim Lorimer on October 9th. Arnold likes what he sees, comes down to me and asks me if I would guest pose for the Olympia the following night on October 10th.
Wow, that's so cool. So what was that like, going out in front of the Olympia crowd, probably like 5,000 people, right?
I believe it was four. I believe that Veterans Memorial holds 4,000.
Right, you're right.
And I remember being a little bit discouraged when I got done, because I was used to people reacting through the whole routine when performing it, like in Utica and in other places.
Mm-hmm.
But these people didn't react until it was over. And I said, Arnold, I don't know if they liked it. He said, no, they are a mature audience. They are respecting you, waiting for you to get done.
Mm.
And I don't remember, but some people said I had some people standing for me that night too.
Yeah.
So, but that was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, really. Just posing at the biggest contest in the world.
Oh, John, here's a story for you. So before I go on.
Okay.
Okay. So you had the Mr. International that day too, if you remember.
Right.
Okay. So the Mr. International competitors came out first. Then they had me perform, and then the Mr. Olympia competitors. So I was pumping up at backstage with all the Mr. Olympia competitors.
Mm.
Franco Colombo is there.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees me getting ready. He sees me pumping up and putting oil on. He says to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm getting ready to go on, Franco. I'm guest posing." He says, "Why?" So I basically explained to him that I had something different, my posing was different, and this, that, and the other thing. And he says, "Ah, very interesting," you know, with that Sardinian accent.
Right.
The next day in the cafe where everybody was eating breakfast, I happened to be speaking with him again, and his wife, Anita, was with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she had seen it, and she complimented me on it. And Franco said, "Ah, very interesting. I wish I could have seen it."
Yeah.
2 years later, at the 83 Mr. Olympia, he was in the audience with Arnold. And this time, after he did see the routine, he pulled me aside at the party afterward and said, "You are the best poser I've ever seen. You should be giving lessons to the pros."
Wow. How cool is that? So when did you get asked to do that routine, to guest pose at the 83 Olympia, which was in Munich, Germany?
What was that promoter's name? Albert Busek.
Albert Busek, yeah.
He was at the 81 Olympia.
Okay.
So he asked me to first come to Germany the following year in 82 for the German bodybuilding championships.
Okay.
And then when 83 came around, I approached him, more or less. I said, "Albert, what do you think? You think you want to bring me back?" And he said yes to that. And so I was brought back for the 83 Olympia in Munich.
So after you did that one in 81, I'm sure you were getting offers from everywhere then, right?
It didn't happen immediately right away.
Okay.
But with time, yes. I went to Germany the following year in 82. In 83, I believe I went to Detroit in July of that year, and then back to the Olympia in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
In September, October. And I think there was one or two other shows. Oh, I also went to the Swedish Grand Prix after that 83 Mr. Olympia.
Okay.
From Munich, we all the competitors and everybody, we all traveled to Stockholm for the Swedish Grand Prix, which was promoted by Ulf Bengtsson.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 84, 84, I think I had about 12 exhibitions.
Wow.
And then in 85, it went up to like 22. And then each year after that, it continued.
Yeah. And you were telling me a story yesterday when we were talking about Joseph Wilkosch and Arnold and Franco at the 83 Olympia.
Yes. The night before in the hotel, we're
downstairs is where it was like a restaurant and a bar and a small dance floor. And so we were all seated around the table.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold was seated at one head. And I was sitting across from Yusuf and his wife. I don't remember her name, but I was sitting across from them. And next to me was a woman from California. And next to her was Franco. And then Arnold was at the head.
Mm-hmm.
When they brought Yusuf Vilcos his meal, the waiter started to, I'm thinking it was salt or something. Either that or you just didn't know what it was. So his wife immediately was like, whoa, no, 99999. As in, you know, you can't put that on there. He can't have that. So,
right, right.
And Rick Wayne was seated next to her.
Okay.
And he immediately pulls out his voice recorder and just starts speaking into it, you know, recording all this so he can, you know, he has information to write in the magazine.
Right. But
here's the best part. Here's the best part. So Arnold is smoking, you know, a cigar. He's smoking a cigar. And next to him is his big Swedish friend. Was it a big Swede that he was friends with that was in Conan?
Yeah, Sten Thorsen, I believe.
Okay. So I think he was seated next to Arnold. And him and Arnold are kidding Franco. They kept doing, I can't do it. I don't know how to roll my tongue, but they kept going, Franco. You know, they kept saying it back and forth. And they're smoking their cigars and they're puffing the smoke in the air. And it was funny the way they were doing it.
Right.
Yeah, boy. And then a little bit later, they started to play some music and we were all out on the floor. Billie Jean comes on and we're dancing to Billie Jean. And then Arnold starts hitting front double biceps and three quarter twists and twisting front double biceps. And he's bouncing at the same time, you know, boy, it was funny.
What kind of dancer was Arnold?
I hope he's not listening.
probably not.
his musicality is not the best in the world. Let's put it
right.
That way.
Right. That's why he had to hit the poses in between the dancing, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So you knew Arnold pretty good then, right? After you guest post for him in 81, it sounds like he invited you to sit at the table and everything.
Well, you know, I don't know how that happened. I don't know if he invited me how I got involved with that whole crew that night. I really don't remember, John.
Yeah.
I wish I could. Yeah, I don't remember how that happened.
Yeah.
But I never really got too close to Arnold. I almost feel like it was a mistake on my part. I should have kind of got in his back pocket, but I never really did. But I will always be so thankful and indebted to him and Jim Lorimer for opening that door in 81. And then, of course, bringing me back in 86. I got back there in 86 by, I was in California in, was it 86 or was it 85? I was in California and I purposely went to his, I had heard it was a rumor. It wasn't true. We didn't know for sure. They were thinking about bringing the Olympia back to Columbus.
Yeah.
And so I purposely went to his office to speak with him and I said, Arnold, what do you think? I heard there's a rumor. Is it possibly coming back to Columbus? And he kind of smiled. And I said, what do you think? You think I could come back and guest pose for 86? And he said, give Jim a call. So I gave Jim a call and Jim Lorimer said yes once again.
Okay. Now, Russ, how did your routine evolve over the years? You know, you started with that robot routine and then you did the other run to the disco music. So how did you keep changing? I'm sure you had to keep adapting and changing over the years, right?
Well, you know, I have a total now of basically 40, what is it, 48?
Wow. 48
routines.
Holy
and
cow.
The first routine to this Magic Bird of Fire was a combination of some robot movements and a little bit of dance. And I had another routine at that time, same thing. And Oscar State, at that time, he was the executive vice president of the IFBB. he said to me, why don't you put together a full robot routine and a full dance routine?
Mm.
So the full robot routine was pretty much just a matter of deciding on the music and then doing the posing as a robot. The dance routine was a little bit tricky. I didn't know where to go with that. And then before you know it, the Motown special, the 25th anniversary of Motown, is on mm-hmm. TV in May of 83.
Yeah.
And I said, that's it. This is it. Michael Jackson did his routine to Billie Jean. And I thought, there you go. How would Michael Jackson do it as a bodybuilder?
Right.
So I studied that routine backwards and forward, slow motion, fast motion. I mean, just getting down his moves. And then basically from the waist up was posing.
Yeah.
And that routine went over so big.
Mm.
I debuted that at the Swedish Grand Prix in 83. And every place I went, people just really looked forward to that.
Yeah.
But, and then from there, it was Prince. Prince pretty much got popular after Michael
right.
Jackson. So, you know, the Purple Rain LP came out. And so I did a couple of routines to Prince, Baby I'm a Star and Purple
yeah.
Rain.
Yeah.
And it was, again, it was the idea of, you know, in other words, the first one was a bodybuilder's interpretation of Michael Jackson. So now it was a bodybuilder's interpretation of Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I think after that, I might have slowed it up a bit and decided to do something at the other end of the spectrum, Over the Rainbow by Sam Harris.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Harris was the first vocalist winner on Star Search.
Right, I remember.
1984, and I think he won with that Over the Rainbow. And if you remember, he kind of had his own way of singing, and he was very expressive with his arms and his hands. So again, it was trying to create his essence on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, the routines just continued with music that would appeal to me.
Did you learn how to do the moonwalk when you're doing Billie Jean?
Yes.
Okay.
although I was, it's funny, I was doing it wrong, John. I thought
oh, really?
I knew how to do it. I was doing it wrong. And then someone around here showed me, someone that I used to just see out at night.
Uh-huh.
And he showed me what I was doing wrong. And then I was able to do it correctly.
Okay. Now, I know at one point also, Russ, you were doing like lip syncing, which I never saw anybody do before. And I think
yes.
that was really effective, right? When did you start doing that?
The first time with that was with Billie Jean.
Okay. Okay.
Because I looked at it as if Michael Jackson was actually a bodybuilder, he would also be able to sing.
Right.
So I had to create that essence too by the lip syncing thing.
Yeah. And, yeah, I remember doing the lip.
I still lip sync. I think it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah. I remember you doing that Prince song, Baby I'm a Star, to that, and that was really, really effective.
That was a very high energy routine. I used to kind of dedicate that routine to all the people who were taking aerobics at the time.
Right.
Because it was definitely a song that was used in aerobic classes, and it was back and forth on stage, a lot of high energy. And I also always will remember that the first time I went to Denver, I did that routine, and as it was, it used to, you know, give me a good cardio workout. But when I did it in Denver, being a mile high,
oh yeah,
what a difference that was!
Right. Yeah, it really is amazing how your routines just took off, because you're not a pro bodybuilder. You didn't have that heavy musculature that a lot of the guys did, especially, you know, you're guest posing at big shows like the Olympia. And you're not developed like that, but yet you can absolutely bring the house down by these amazing routines that are really creative. And you bring this energy into it, and you're doing the lip syncing, you're doing the dancing. And I don't think anybody ever saw anything like that before.
Thank you. And that's what it was. It was just very different. It was, It was the whole idea of, again, the musicality, moving to the music. It was a show in itself.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just one routine. Back in the 80s, John, I was averaging four routines with each exhibition.
Oh, really? Wow.
Three to four routines. Yeah, I'd open the show. The promoter liked when I would open the show with no introduction, because that was the other thing. Most guest posers were coming out at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were closing the show. So yeah. I'd come out first with one routine, open the show, and then they'd bring me out usually halfway in between the show or right before intermission, something like that. And then I would close with a third routine and towards the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was more than just posing. It was like Dr. Lynn Perry said when I was on ESPN, she said, Russ ought to take this to Vegas. You know, she said, Russ ought to take this to Vegas, paint himself gold, she used to say.
right.
But did you ever see that, John, when I was on it was in Detroit. It was for the Women's Nationals and Mixed Pairs Championships 1985.
Okay.
And ESPN covered it. Gemma Wheeler was the promoter. She was looking for some type of opening act where it was me and the competitors.
Hmm.
And I mean, she basically told me this when I got there. And
wow.
So I thought, okay, well, let's go with the Baby I'm a Star routine.
Uh-huh.
And the competitors were off stage in the back, lined up. I came out in the beginning, did about maybe a minute and a half of Baby I'm a Star on my own. And then I would just kind of go to each side of the stage, point, and a row of bodybuilders would come out and just stand behind me.
Oh, cool.
Before you know it, the whole competition was out there behind me and kind of doing some poses and clapping. And they showed this on ESPN from like November of 85 to November of 86. And a lot of people saw that. And that's probably the best exposure I've had my whole life.
Mm. What happened after that contest? Did you get a lot of calls from everybody, from promoters all over?
Yes. My best years were 86 and 87.
Okay. And how many guest posings were you doing in those years?
30.
Wow. Okay. Now, were you doing anything else for a living, Russ, or were you just able to make your living off all these guest posings?
No, at that time I was able to live on the guest posing.
Yeah. Did you ever get offers from other bodybuilders, like Franco said, to teach them how to pose?
I never did, John.
Really? Wow.
I never did.
That's amazing.
One time I helped Steve Brizois.
Yeah.
He had moved to Florida because he married Tom Ciola's daughter.
Okay.
And I had known Steve before that anyway, but Tom had brought me down to help Steve. He was getting ready for a contest. This was back in... Oh boy, I can't remember that year, but that's pretty much the only pro that I really helped.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember him posing before. He had some really good routines.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Now, how about your competition, Russ? Were you still competing during those years when you were doing all these guest posing?
No, I had stopped in 84. My last competition was the 1984 Pro-Am Mixed Pairs Championships up in Toronto. It was an invitation. Oh, yeah, it was a Pro-Am. It was invitation.
Mm-hmm.
My partner and I got invited by, I think, Wayne D'Amelia. And so we were going against Diana Dennis and Kevin Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
Lydia Chang, and... I forget who her partner was. It's hard to remember who those other competitors were, but
yeah,
that was my actual last competition. We did not place. We came in sixth. We came in sixth, and that was a bit frustrating because it was broadcast on NBC Sports.
Yeah.
And they only showed the top five.
Oh, wow. What kind of routine did you guys do?
3 points. Well, we did a routine to Thriller.
Okay.
My partner and I did a routine to Thriller, and it went over very well. And it's just too bad because all of the judges pretty much had us first or second for the posing round.
Yeah.
Except one judge had us like ninth.
Really? Wow.
So it totally brought us down.
Yeah.
And we missed fifth place by 3 points.
Mm.
It's too bad. We would have been on that.
Mm. Now, Russ, I got to ask you about your training and diet, because I know you're a natural bodybuilder and you're guest posing at all these shows when you're at your peak. And that had to be tough, right? Because you had to constantly stay in shape. You could never really have an off season. You couldn't really put on any fat because you're guest posing almost every weekend.
Yes, I always, I had built a reputation early that I was in condition.
Yeah.
For guest posing. So I pretty much ate year round, not totally contest diet,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but as much as I knew back then, and I maintained the same weight pretty much all year round.
Yeah.
170, 172. And, for each competition, I might have come down to maybe 167, 168.
Hmm. Wow.
But that was about it. And
yeah.
in the 80s, it was just hard training and good eating. But then in the 90s, the cardio thing started to happen.
Mm.
So I started to do cardio on a treadmill, and that's when I really started to get lean for these exhibitions.
Okay. So what was your training like, Russ, as a natural bodybuilder? Were you training, like 4 days a week, 5 days a week?
I pretty much have done 5 days a week since the 80s.
Okay.
In the early 80s, I was doing 6 days a week, and then I just wanted to cut it back.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut it to 5 days a week. And I started on a program in the 80s where Monday and Thursday would be the same workout. Tuesday and Friday would be the same workout.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday would be by itself, but that Wednesday workout would pick up the following Monday. So each day moved.
Yes.
The training moved. So I didn't train the same body parts the same days.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
It would change every week.
It was the idea of working certain body parts twice a week, but then on Wednesday, that body part got a break with once a week.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
And then it changed the following week. And I kind of have stuck with that. I'd stuck with that all through the 80s, all through the 90s. Not working the same body parts together, of course, doing different mm-hmm. combinations. But then as I got into the 2000s, I did start to do things a little bit different, working maybe body parts once a week.
Right.
And also taking breaks throughout the year, maybe working just 3 days a week just to give my body a break for a little mm-hmm. bit.
Right.
But then getting back to it.
And do you train heavy, Russ? Do you do like heavy compound movements or more isolation stuff or combination?
I did both, John. I did both. I was always a believer in the basics. Did more incline work than flat work.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely because I definitely had a few issues with my shoulder, my one shoulder, my AC joint back in the middle 80s. So I got away from flat benching purposely mm-hmm. for a while. And I always felt that the upper chest, I always needed more than the middle and the lower chest anyway.
Right.
So I got into a lot of incline work with both dumbbells and barbells. And then I've always been a squatter, always believed in squatting deep. And I did some powerlifting too. I got in three power meets.
Oh, no kidding.
So I learned how to deadlift, and And yeah, I enjoyed doing that type of, because that was a nice break from bodybuilding, because you trained your body parts less, you trained heavier, but you trained them less, and mm-hmm. of course you could definitely eat a little bit more too.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that, but as I mentioned yesterday when we were speaking, I don't want to leave this out concerning doing those dumbbell incline presses or flat dumbbell presses. Mm-hmm. Reading from your articles that you used to write in Iron Man magazine.
Yeah.
I will always appreciate reading how you wrote that when doing that flat dumbbell bench press or the incline press, think of the triangle over your chest
mm-hmm.
with the dumbbells on the side at the angle, and then you press them to the point.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
All right. What about your diet, Russ? What was your diet like throughout the years?
Diet in the early 80s was, first of all, I never took my diet to the point of weighing food, counting calories. I just was never that strict. I ate healthy foods. I ate chicken and fish and lean sources of beef and mm-hmm. oatmeal. But before we knew better, I was eating pasta.
Mm-hmm.
I was eating pasta, and there was a time when I thought bran muffins were okay to eat, you know, but then I remember by the time the 90s come around and you start reading and learning more and more, plus I had also hooked up with John Perillo. John and I kind of knew who we knew each other. He was mm-hmm. also at the 81 Mr. Olympia. I think he judged that.
Oh, really?
But the Gold's Gym had a 25th anniversary convention in California, and I was asked to perform at that, and John Perillo was there with his products, and I got talking with Janet Tech and her husband about them. Do you remember mm-hmm. Janet Tech?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So they were very impressed with his products, and that whole idea of increasing the metabolism by eating more, that I did not know of then.
Mm-hmm.
And so Perillo had educated me on all of that, and I started using his products. I still use his products. I think they're very good. And so I had started to increase my appetite a little bit, but also got much stricter with the foods that I was eating. So in other words, now I had learned that, okay, can't be eating this pasta the way I was eating it, and definitely all the processed, the other processed carbohydrates. Not that I was eating a lot of them, but I had totally, you know, I had learned to eliminate all of that and start eating more better carbohydrates like brown rice and oatmeal and
mm-hmm.
and sweet potatoes and baked potatoes and of course lots of vegetables and greens, what he would call the fibrous carbohydrates.
Right. So now, Russ, you're going on almost 50 years of training, and you're still doing guest posing, right? I mean, not to the extent you were doing in the 80s, but you're still getting requests for guest posing.
Yes, I just came back. It's just a month now. I was in Boise, Idaho for the mm-hmm. 2019 Idaho Cup, which is promoted by Brad and Elaine Craig Productions. They are the ones who produce the Emerald Cup, the biggest show on the Northwest.
Right.
And they started using me back in 85.
And wow.
They have used me more than any other promoter. I think it's now a total of 16 times.
Wow.
But Idaho, it was nice to go. It was the first time that I had hit Idaho. I was never to that state before.
Uh-huh.
So that was just this past November, November 2nd. Last year, they used me for their Ironman Natural Championships. Same promoters, Brad and Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year before, they had used me for the 2017 Emerald Cup. And I'm expecting to go back to that Emerald Cup in 17 and 5 is 2022, because they like to use me on the anniversary years. 2017
okay.
was the 35th, so 2022 will be the 40th.
Wow, that's amazing.
Expecting to go back to that. But yeah, I don't get the numbers that I used to, but yes, I'm still, oh, and in the spring, I'm going to Peoria, Illinois for the NGA, Heart of America competition. That I have done several times. It was first started by Jerry Thomas in 95.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Abraham took over, I think, in 2004. And this year is their 25th. And
no kidding.
I'm sorry, next year in the spring, next April, is the 25th anniversary of that. And so John has asked me to come back to perform for that.
Wow. Yeah, I know John. I've guest posed at that show too. I think probably around the time he started it, right around 2004, 2005.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how old are you now, Russ?
I am 62.
That's great. That's awesome. You're still doing the guest posing. Now, what's the reaction of the crowds now? Because I know things have obviously changed since the 80s, you know, since Michael Jackson and Prince and everything. And you were unique at that time. So what kind of reaction do you get from the crowds now?
I still get very good reactions and still really kind and very nice compliments that I get from people. But I will say it's still not the same as it was back in the 80s. You know, there was a time every show I was going to was a standing ovation.
And
every show was leading to another show. And I think, again, it was because it was so different back then.
Yeah.
Now you've got it's still different. But like, for example, the other performer at this Idaho show was a hand balancer.
Okay.
So he's up there doing handstands and holding himself in different positions. So that's impressive also in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not the only different performance up there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's, but yeah, the crowds are still very respectful and very, very cheerful. They like very much what they're seeing, but it's just not total brand new to them.
Yeah. Now I got to ask you, Russ, what do you think of the way the people pose today, the way the bodybuilders pose? Because I know you're a big proponent of the art of bodybuilding from the very start, ever since you started it. And Ed Corney was one of your idols, and Frank Zane and Arnold, and those were your early influences. So what do you think of the way that people pose today compared to how they were doing it like 30 years ago?
Yeah, it's not the same.
Right.
I see a few competitors out there that take it serious and they try to be artists up there and they do well. But I see others that they just kind of come out there and they hit a few poses here and there. The music is background, and it's gone by the wayside. I don't think competitors think about their posing anymore, but I've always said this, John, that it's not totally their fault. If the posing is not being judged, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, they could say, well, you know, they should bother anyway because they're up there. The audience is there to see them, but competition is so hard today. Compared to what it was years ago, I think bodybuilders sometimes they're so they have so much to prepare. It's so hard to prepare that posing. I think they put posing on the side, on the side burner, and instead of including it with everything else, because they know that the posing routine is not going to be judged. So they don't put much into it.
Yeah.
However, there's no excuse for poor posing for the prejudging, because that is judged. And if they're not putting their time into that, that's just wrong. I don't know why you would not want to be better at that. I mean, if you have a great physique, if you can't display it, what is the point?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems to me that the bodybuilders today, or the competitors today, I should say, they kind of learn from each other, and there's really no good examples anymore. And I can remember competing as a teenager back in the 80s, and it would be like everybody out there was at least trying to do a really good routine, and they would have it choreographed to the music, and their transitions were very smooth. And now it seems when I see these people posing in a lot of the local shows, and even maybe even the top amateur shows, it just seems like everybody kind of does the poses all the same. They do the lat spread the same. They do the side chest the same. Their transitions from poses to poses are the same. And if you look at the bodybuilders from the 80s and the 90s, like the top pros, it really was an art form. And everybody was unique back then. They all had their own take on it. And I don't really see that anymore. And I just wish some of these other competitors, some of the new guys competing at the local shows or even the pros, would start like taking the example of the bodybuilders like Frank Zane, Ed Corney, even Lee Labrada, Gaspari, Muhammad McAway, you know, all the really good posers from those eras, and just try to develop their own unique style and do something that's going to make them stand out. I just think if you were a pro, it would really make you, you know, make a difference in the way people look at you, you know, and I just don't see the effort being made anymore.
Yeah, I think it's the competitors today don't know those classics that you just mentioned. They haven't seen Zane and Samir and Arnold and Franco and Ed Corney. They haven't seen them pose like the way you and I saw them. And so the guys today, they don't, the pros today, not all of them, some of them, but they're not showing the young competitors today what they should be doing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other thing too. I think the emphasis of just wanting to be huge and wanting to be huge and ripped is all that is on their mind. They know they have to be as big as possible, and they know they have to be in condition to win. There isn't anything in their head that's saying, oh, I gotta have good posing to win. No, mm-hmm. I think all they're thinking about is being huge, as big as possible, and as ripped as possible.
Yeah, so, I think you're right.
I've always said, John, the posing, if we had a standard, if we had some definite yeses and definite nos, or definite rights and definite wrongs to posing,
mm-hmm.
that would be our ticket to making this sport more objective than subjective. In other words, you know, when I used to give my seminar, I used to talk about the front double biceps and bringing it, when you're in your position like that, that, you know how some, they would do it and their thumb is sticking out.
Yeah.
As opposed to clenching it against or hiding it inside your fingers.
Right.
That's the way I've always done it. So
me too, yeah.
So if that thumb is sticking out, why not have immediate points taken off for that?
Yeah.
That's an obvious, you know, it's not subjective. It's right there. It looks better when you have a clenched fist or when the thumb is inside.
Mm-hmm.
Or for example, Franco Colombo used to make this mistake sometimes in photos. In his front double biceps, his shoulders would be a little bit high.
Mm-hmm.
So when the shoulders are shrugged, you lose the width in your lats. When you do front double biceps, this is something I emphasize with just about every pose. You got to force those shoulders down. That is what contracts the lats and gives you width.
Mm-hmm.
If you shrug the shoulders up or forward, you lose the width in your lats. So again, if judges were to see that, why not immediate points off for that?
Yeah.
Here's something that people won't want to hear. I never liked the idea of when asking for a most muscular that you were allowed to do whatever one you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the most muscular is the crab most muscular.
Yeah.
And that should be done with the traps flexed. But you have some doing it that way, but others are doing it without their traps flexed, and it's more of what I call a front chest pose. So what I'm saying is, when asking for that crab most muscular, if those traps are not up, points off.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you tell when they're, well, you can see it, but you could actually have someone walk behind the competitors, and when the traps are flexed, your shoulder blades stick out.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just, these are thoughts that I've had just to, as a way of making posing more objective. So it's not just a matter of, oh, he looks good or it doesn't look good.
Right.
Because, and then that whole thing with the traps, that becomes muscle control at the same time.
Yeah.
And how about this? Why not have a vacuum? Let's see the vacuum on everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can't do it, you get points off.
Right.
And of course, we could even take it to the, I'm really going to, this one I shouldn't say because I can't do it. What about the rope trick?
Yeah, nobody would even know what that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, how cool would it be if, you know, because I've gone to some local shows, and after the show's over, the judges are getting up from the table and the competitors are coming around the judges and saying, hey, what do I need to work on? How cool would it be if some of these judges said, well, I would have placed you higher, but your posing was terrible. You know, I mean, your free posing, you just didn't show your physique, or some of the compulsory poses, you know, you didn't do the side tricep right, and you didn't do the rear lat spread right. Man, that would send a message to these competitors that, wow, I better get this chip better. Otherwise, I'm not going to place higher, you know?
Absolutely. John, I'll never forget when I guest posed, I think it was 2000, I was in Michigan. The judges were not even seated at the table for the night show.
Wow.
I was like, where are they? I'm saying, what's going on here? Aren't the competitors being judged?
Yeah. So, yeah, it just goes to show you how unimportant it was.
And I think if we were to really emphasize the posing more and judge it better, I think it's also a ticket to the general public accepting the sport more.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Because that's how you bridge the gap from, you know, our sport to the general public, by making it unique and artistic.
I compare it with gymnastics and dance. People like movement. People like music. People like movement to music.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with, you know, the gymnasts are, I mean, gymnastics is somewhat subjective in a way, but they have definites that they are supposed to do. And when they don't do them, the points are taken off.
Yeah.
But again, the whole thing with movement and music, I mean, people like to see that. So if the posing routine was emphasized and competitors got really good with their routines, I just think that people would really appreciate bodybuilding so much more.
I remember I did an interview with Charles Gaines, the author of Pumping Iron, about a year ago, and he said he remembers when he first was getting into bodybuilding, he brought Kurt Vonnegut and his wife to a show. They knew nothing about bodybuilding. This is a guy from the literary world. And when they saw Ed Corney pose, they were so impressed. You know, because here now, this is a totally new sport for them. They've never seen anything about it. They don't know anything about it. But the way Corney posed bridged that gap from someone who's looking at it for the first time was able to appreciate it because it was so well done.
Yes. Yeah. The only time I saw Ed Corney, I think it was 2 weeks before that first show that I competed at.
Mm-hmm.
It was another show in Connecticut that Mike Katz promoted. And he had Ed come in to guest pose. And Eddie came out the first time and posed to, I'm trying to remember now. He did it in a silhouette.
Oh, cool.
And he did it to Rocky, to the theme from Rocky.
Oh, cool.
And then he encored, he came back later and did his famous routine to My Way.
But yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And he got a standing ovation.
Yeah. I got to see him in 77 when he got like two standing ovations when he got third place in the Olympia. That's an experience I'll never forget.
Wow.
Well,
where was that? Was that
Columbus? Yeah. Well, you got to be grateful like me, Russ, that we saw bodybuilding at the golden age, you know, the 70s and the 80s.
John, whenever I think about that, it's just, yes, we really are truly blessed to be able to be a part of that. And I just wish, did you ever see Arnold?
No, I never saw him pose. I never saw him guest pose. I wish I would have. I think I got into it just a little after, because I got into bodybuilding in 77. I think he was doing a lot of guest posings in 76, but I never got a chance to see him pose.
Yeah, me neither. That would have been, you know, because he, you know, he, that was before music was being used, or, yeah, you know, they might have had some music playing in the background, but Arnold was a great poser.
He was.
He had those big transitions, and every pose was hit just perfect.
Just perfect, right.
You know? And his famous transition is when he goes from what I call a three-quarter back, one arm extended, and then he comes around and he goes into a twisting front double biceps.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, it's just – and him – and his – he used to put his thumb inside.
Yeah, I know. Right? I think that's where I learned it.
Yeah, that's where I learned it. Absolutely. Yeah. So, yes, he really was an excellent poser.
Yeah. Russ, looking back on your career and all the shows you've done and all the experiences and memories, what few memories stand out? Are there any that you'll always remember?
Well, of course, it's posing at the Olympias, and it's a couple of those stories that I told you.
Mm-hmm.
My trips to Europe were always really great memories, starting with Germany and Sweden. Ulf Bengtsson was excellent to me. He very much enjoyed using my services, and Sweden was a great people, and Holland. I had some great experiences in Holland in 88, 89, 90, I think, and then again in 96.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, they brought me back in 2014. Harry is what's Harry's last name? I can't think of his last name, but he's the promoter of a big show that they hold over there, actually the first weekend in December.
Okay.
And they brought me back in 2014, and I did, I think, six routines over 2 days.
Uh-huh.
And so just it's kind of hard to actually pinpoint it down to just one. It's just so many great experiences, so many great memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned Brad and Elaine Craig, how many times they've used me, but I did a show 9 years straight in Omaha, Nebraska for Todd Mills.
Okay.
Todd was involved with the NANBF, North American Natural Bodybuilding Federation, and he had the Omaha Muscle Muscle Classic, I think it was. And he used me 9 years straight, and just developing great friendships and great relationships with people over the years. And every place I went was special.
Yeah. Well, you had a hell of a career, Russ. And I know those of us that enjoy posing really admire your contribution to the sport. I got a chance to see you guest pose several times. So I just want to thank you for joining us on the show. And it's great hearing your stories. And thanks again for all that you did for the sport of bodybuilding. And I hope sometimes people will get inspired by what you're doing to improve their posing and bring back the art to the sport of bodybuilding.
Well, I hope so. And it's been unbelievable for me. If you think about it, John, because you know, my dream at first was to become the professional bodybuilder, but I was going to do it. I was going to do it naturally,
right?
But I didn't have the physique to do it naturally. I wasn't big enough, but I believe God opened this door for me for performance, because it was really the performance that I loved so much. Yes, I enjoyed competing, but I loved posing. And, you know, when you compete, you can only pose for what, 90 seconds, 2 minutes at the most.
Right.
But now here I am traveling all over the world and doing 3 to 4 routines in an evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the professional bodybuilder, not as a competitor, but the professional bodybuilder / entertainer. And so the dream was fulfilled. And of course I need to say this, because as always with every performance for me, the night is not complete unless I give my thank you and my all praise and glory to the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right.
As a Christian, the Bible says whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God, 1 Corinthians 10:31. So I just want to say that, and the fact that it's December and Christmas season, it is about the Lord Jesus Christ. It's about the Lord God becoming a man and living
right.
A totally holy, perfect, sinless life, just so he could die as a common criminal to pay the price for the sin of the world, the sin of man. And I tell you, for everyone listening, put your faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and you'll have the best Christmas ever.
All right, Russ.
I appreciate that, John. Thank you for letting me say that.
All right. Thank you. And thanks again for a great interview. Like I said, it was my honor to talk to you, because I've admired you from throughout many of the years. So thanks again for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, John. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
All right. I do too, Russ. All right. Take care. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too. God bless. Merry Christmas.
You too. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Russ Testo for joining us for that interview. And also thanks to Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right. Now, without further ado, I'm going to read this article from the January 1981 issue of Iron Man magazine. This was when Perry Rader was still publishing the magazine. And this issue has Gary Leonard on the cover, because he just won the Mr. America in 1980. And on the back cover, if you remember, these magazines had pictures on the front and back cover. There's a great shot of Richard Baldwin, who was Mr. America in the middleweight class, and photo by Dave, which I'm assuming was Dave Sawyer. And Dave also took the picture on the front of Gary Leonard. All right, but here's our article from Gary Bartlett. It's called Frank Zane, How He Trained. In spite of the fact that Frank Zane did not win 4 Olympia titles in a row, he is still the champion in the eyes of his fans, and there are many thousands of them around the world. This controversial Olympia will never convince his followers that he is anything but the best in the world. Prior to the Olympia, I had the privilege of interviewing Frank about his preparations for the Olympia, and I would like to share with you some of the training principles Frank used. Remember, Frank is one of the greatest ever. And if you use his routines and exercises, just remember that you probably will have to modify the workload somewhat to fit your own ability and capacity. I had the pleasure of spending some time with Frank and Christine Zane a couple of months before the Olympia. Frank was appearing at the Canadian Bodybuilding Championships as a guest poser. In fact, he stated that as soon as he got home, he would begin extensive training for the next Olympia. Upon the subject of the Olympia, he informed me that to retain the title, he would definitely have to be heavier than last year, with the same extreme muscularity he's famous for. During the past year, Frank has been employing a system entirely to increase his size. This is done by training 3 days in a row, employing one heavy bulk building exercise in each workout. The breakdown would be day 1, thighs, calves, and abs. Day 2, chest, shoulders, triceps, and abs. Day 3, back, biceps, forearms, and abs. He will try to employ the heaviest weights possible while in this building process. The heavy weights will help push his body weight up. Each workout day is based around one power building exercise. Day 1 is the squat, doing 6 sets, working up in weight in each set. He will go as high as 355 pounds for his final set, which is considered heavy in comparison to the poundages he used to use. Day 2 is centered around the bench press, which is started out by doing 15 reps, 10 reps, and then sets of 6, adding 5 pounds each set, until a maximum of 300 pounds is reached. The last workout day is based around the deadlift, which gives the various back muscles a good workout. Frank feels that this system is ideal for adding increased bulk in a sensible manner. Along with the basic exercise each workout, he will supplement the rest of his routine with the regular exercises performed in sets of three or four. I questioned Frank if he felt that this type of routine would give him the necessary size he needed. He replied by saying that he would compete around 197 this year and be even more muscular than last year. At the exhibition the following evening, he displayed exceptional size, with his supermuscularity being only weeks away. Upon the subject of how he would carve in the detail, which only he can display, Frank stated that he may try a new system this year. You have to be aware of the needs of your body and do what it tells you. After many years of training, you develop a kind of instinct, and I intend on acting according to what I feel is necessary. He feels that the best system to try this year is to work 4 days in a row and then rest one day and repeat the whole cycle again. Day one, at 11 o'clock to 1:30, he would train chest, shoulders, and triceps. Day two, at 11 o'clock to 1:30, he would train back, biceps, and forearms. And day two, at 6 o'clock in the evening, he would train thighs and calves. Abs are worked every day. The third and fourth days are repeated the same as above, but with lighter weights and a much faster workout tempo. He felt that this routine would take him to the Olympia in the best shape of his life. On the subject of diet, he feels that he will follow the standard of high protein diet with a low carbohydrate intake. This is the type of diet which has taken him to 3 successful Olympia wins. He explained that he tried the lower protein with a higher carbohydrate intake, but he didn't feel as well. His energy level seemed to rise and fall without giving him the required results. Frank feels that the ideal diet for him would be a fairly high protein intake, around 300 grams, with a more moderate carbohydrate consumption of 100 grams. The calories would range between 2,500 to 3,000. He feels that the carbohydrates should come from starches because fruit is too concentrated with simple sugars, resulting in a rapid rise in blood sugar. Starches provide a more slow-burning fuel, which results in a longer-lasting energy level for your workouts. Frank was very quiet when questioned on how he felt he would do against Mensah this year. He maintained that Mike was training very hard and he had increased his size, but he still didn't have the detailed striations necessary to win the Olympia. He holds a very high opinion of Chris Dickerson and respects what he has done in the past year. He feels that Dickerson is one of the true sportsmen and respects the attitude upon the stage. Even in defeat, he is a gentleman. He feels Dickerson is very good, but he still has weaknesses that the judges will penalize him for. He felt that Arnold would not compete because it had been 5 years since Arnold's last competition, and he didn't feel there would be time for him to get in top shape. Of course, we now know that Arnold did compete and he won the title. Frank displayed a confidence which was hard to break. If he was to be beaten, then he was the last to know. I feel that this is his tremendous belief in himself that has taken him from an average pro bodybuilder to the best. I witnessed his third successful Olympia win last year. It is almost impossible to describe the feeling I got when Frank was introduced to the Columbus audience. Frank slowly walked to the front of the stage, completely relaxed. He gazed around, and then suddenly, without warning, he clenched his fist, causing ripples of muscles and veins to fight in an effort to escape through his paper-thin skin. A shiver went down my spine as a slow roar gradually built up into a deafening round of applause as 4,000 fans were screaming for Zane at the top of their lungs. I will never forget this spectacle of human achievement. The question that is left lingering in my mind is, what is it about this Zane that sets him apart from all the others? I believe that it all goes much deeper than the mere physical. All the competitors have plenty of muscle. That's only part of what it takes. Zane has developed his mental power to the point where he can shape, bend, and distort his destiny to achieve exactly what he wants. He has taken the Olympia crown and made it his, in spite of all opposition, for 3 years. The fact that Frank did not win his fourth Olympia is irrelevant. He is truly a modern-day phenomenon, and I, for one, am glad that I've been able to see him at his best. All right. Great article by Gary Bartlett. Interesting to read that because this was taken, as Gary said, when Frank did an exhibition in Canada, and he was much bigger because he had been training heavier all year. And it just makes you wonder what Frank would have looked like if he wouldn't have gotten in that terrible accident where he fell off the chair and cut his urethra on the edge of the pool, where he lost so much blood and he lost a lot of training time. And then obviously he competed, I think he was only about 180 pounds when he competed in the 1980 Mr. Olympia, and he was way too light. He was in great shape still, great symmetry, and really, really ripped. And he did take third place behind Dickerson and Zane. But wow, what would have happened if Zane would have not gotten that injury and competed at about 197, which would have been, I think, 4 or 5 pounds, I think 4 pounds bigger than the year before, where he was at his absolute best. I mean, it's hard to imagine Arnold beating him when Arnold was still had a lot of weak points and he was not at his best. Dickerson was probably at his all-time best in that contest. So it would have been really, really interesting if they still would have given it to Arnold with Zane being that good. So we can only speculate because that's not how it happened. All right. That is it for our show this week. Thanks again to Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And thank you again to our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in contributing to the show and helping sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, just go to the website, bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, we have the Patreon link, and you can contribute as much as you like to help keep the show going. I appreciate your support. All right, guys, that's it. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.